Hi, and welcome to the CBI Exchange, where we will bring you intelligent insider conversations on the issues that matter most to UK business. My name is Tracy Black, and I'm the Chief Commercial Officer at the CBI. And today we're focusing on the budget and what it means to our members and to the UK economy. I'm joined by Louise, our Chief Economist, Alpesh, our Deputy Chief Economist, and Megan, our Director for London and the South East. Welcome to the show.
Great to be joined by you. We've got probably about half an hour where we're going to focus on the budget. This is one of three episodes we're going to do, and today is really about setting the scene, what we're hearing, what we are hoping for out of the budget. But I think it would be really helpful for the audience to sort of just get a sense of how we see the UK economy, that big picture, as we head into the budget. So Louise, do you want to maybe give us a little bit of a sort of idea of how we're looking at things?
Yeah, so I think when we look at the economy at the moment and when we talk to our members, we're in a period of quite low growth in the UK economy, and also one where businesses in all sectors talk to us about the high costs that they're facing as well. So we know that the UK has got the potential to grow much further. We all want to see it growing further and faster, but at the moment it feels like we're quite stuck in that kind of low growth, high cost equilibrium.
And therefore, what has got us to this situation? Because on the one hand, we always hear that the UK is the sixth largest economy. We've got fantastic service sectors that are growing. We've got aerospace. We're good at tech. But as you say, if we look at per capita, we're much further down the ranks. So what is it that set us apart from other countries, I suppose? Is it the recent issues of COVID and Brexit, or does it go back much further than that?
So I think it is a combination of things. So really it is ultimately a long-term challenge that we faced in the UK around low productivity growth. And that's really where we've seen persistent low rates of investment, both from the private sector, but from government and the public sector as well. But you're right that what we've also faced over the last couple of years is a series of different shocks and challenges. So whether that is Brexit, that's COVID, that's the energy crisis. And those progressively have hit business confidence and made it even harder to do that investment that we all want to see.
And Alpesh, you know, you're always looking at the numbers. What are they telling you? Are you worried, or are there any sort of signs or signals that it's going to get better?
Well, I think, as Louise said, we do appear to be stuck in this sort of low growth trap. I mean, if we look at growth over the last year, it was about 1%. Our own forecast, the CBI's own forecast, expects it to kind of roughly stay at that level over the next couple of years. That's not great. It's not nothing, but it's not fantastic. The economy is facing a number of headwinds. I mean, Louise spoke about sort of costs and the sheer degree of cost pressures on businesses at the moment. That's coming against the backdrop of quite a middling demand environment, just because it appears that households are being a bit cautious with spending. And of course, we shouldn't forget just how high uncertainty is at the moment, uncertainty both at home, but also across the world. You know, businesses have been dealing with a lot of global headwinds, from volatility in geopolitics to US tariffs, for instance. And taking all of that together, you know, that's really compounding this environment of sort of quite sluggish growth. And there is scope for that to get better, definitely, but it is very contingent on all three of those headwinds receding considerably, particularly households becoming a little bit less cautious and rediscovering their appetite to spend.
Because I've certainly heard that from some of our sort of banking sector, and I'm sure you have as well, Megan, that actually cash on account in the UK is pretty positive, that there is money there.
Yeah, and I think particularly when you look at the challenges like, you know, achieving net zero, etc., there's a lot of money there to be spent. You know, the banks will say there is the capital available. But I think the problem is, well, there's a couple of issues. One is the general investability of the UK. You know, we hear from members all the time that, particularly if you've got an international board, it's really difficult to sell the UK as a place to invest. But I think also the challenges around this uncertainty point is, you know, I think the government just hasn't delivered on a lot of things that businesses really want to see. And this is the challenge. There's a lot of things are being looked at, reviewed, but there's not necessarily a lot of action happening.
So we'll come on to some of the choices, but it'd be sort of good to get a sense of, like, really how much headroom does the Chancellor actually have when looking at public finances? I think we've sort of talked about before, you know, she can borrow, she can cut spending, or she can raise taxes. So, Louise, you know, the press, if you read it, would suggest that she's got no headroom at all. What's your sort of feeling?
Yeah, so if we think back to that last budget in the spring, the Chancellor gave herself a £9.9 billion worth of headroom. So that's that kind of buffer that she had. Otherwise, you will have spending running higher than she needs it to meet those fiscal rules that she has. That historically is quite a low level. Actually, it's not too dissimilar to that kind of headroom that she inherited. So Jeremy Hunt left himself a similar amount. But actually, it's about half what it used to be historically. So it used to have kind of 20, you know, sometimes up to £30 billion of headroom. So that, in a way, is what you can think of as the wiggle room to meet those kind of targets. Since we've had that budget back in the spring, we have had a couple of policies that they haven't been able to get through. So things like the welfare changes that they wanted to make, which will add extra spending pressure to the Chancellor. And we've also seen some of those economic conditions change. So again, the interest rate payments that the government needs to make on their kind of debt and borrowing, those are higher. And obviously there is a lot of speculation and high expectation that the Office for Budget Responsibility will revise down their productivity forecast as well. So again, in terms of the Chancellor making those sums add up, there are lots of things that have gone the other way to make that even harder for her. And that's where you want to leave yourself more wiggle room. And instead, she's likely to need to find some more money from somewhere else. So like you say, that's where you get into the discussion about, are we going to have to see some tax rises coming down the track?
And then Alpesh, you know, we hear a lot about the debt. Is it as big a problem as it makes? Like, does it matter if you're sort of at whatever, I think it's 94, 95% of our GDP? Does that... What's the impact of that?
Yeah, so I think looking at debt specifically and the stock of debt in the UK, actually it's about 95% of GDP, which when we compare it to other advanced economies is not especially high. You know, it in and of itself it's not a problem. That being said, however, markets do seem to be very disproportionately concerned about the sustainability of the fiscal position in the UK. And that's less about debt, that's more about sort of the budget deficit, which is actually quite large compared to other advanced economies. Louise kind of alluded to it, but, you know, yields on UK debt are the highest in the G7, and that really puts pressure on debt servicing costs. I think there is a stat flying around that the government's debt servicing payments last year were sort of almost double what they spend on defence, for instance. So that is... that risks sort of compounding fiscal pressure, which makes sort of markets more concerned. So
can you just explain a little bit what that means, yields on debt? What does that actually mean?
Well, the government obviously issues debt. They issue bonds, which are sort of colloquially known as gilts. And when we talk about the yield on debt, that's sort of related to how much that debt yields for the investor. You know, when you buy a government bond...
So it's the rate.
It's the rate, yeah, exactly, yeah. But obviously... yields being disproportionately high when the stock of debt is not a problem, but it's sort of towards the higher end, does mean that puts additional pressure on the public finances because they have to pay out more in terms of interest. Yeah.
Got you. I suppose, why does this all matter right now? Like, we've definitely seen in recent years that budgets have become like this huge event in themselves. You know, the amount of discussions on them, they start weeks, months in advance. Is there something particular about this budget being more important than other budgets, would you say?
I'll sort of differ a little bit to Louise and Megan on this one, but I think it's the juncture at which this budget is coming. You know, we've had several years of quite weak growth now. We are still feeling the legacies of the COVID pandemic on the public finances. We've had a number of years of very high inflation as well. All of that has really put pressure on the economy and thus has compounded the pressure on the public finances. And it doesn't feel like there's sort of much more wiggle room. As I say, there have been a lot of spending cuts happened during sort of the 2010s, during that period of austerity. So there's very little room to kind of do much there to repair the public finances. So the burden is falling on taxation. The question then arises as to, well, who shoulders that burden, for instance, as well. So it feels like sort of in terms of a that policy space of sort of weak growth and high inflation. That's the place that no policymaker wants to be in, whether you're a fiscal policymaker or a monetary policymaker. So I think in coming back to the question of why this matters, it's sort of the juncture that we find ourselves at. It is quite a tricky one, I think, for any government and any chancellor.
Megan, do you think this is playing out for members? Is it having an impact on the decisions that they're making?
So I think this is a really interesting budget, actually, because I think both in from a professional point of view and a personal point of view, because there's whether you're a household, whether you're a business, you are looking to this budget for some certainty. And I think that's what a lot of businesses are looking for at the moment, is that policy certainty, because there's just been so much uncertainty. And also, obviously, the impact that the last budget had last year, I think that, you know, that affected quite a lot of sectors, and a lot of sectors that are feeling quite hard done by at the moment. And, you know, particularly those in hospitality, retail, etc. They're, you know, facing those kind of high costs of doing business that Louise was talking about. And I think they're the sectors that are feeling a little bit left behind, particularly because they're not a focus of the industrial strategy. So they're really looking for, you know, what is in it for them? Where is this budget going to provide them with some certainty to move forward and start making those important investment decisions?
Louise, does this feel like you've been in Treasury side, you're obviously on the CBA, you know, does this feel different to you? And what do you hear when you're obviously speaking to a lot of our members as well? What are the sort of key messages you're getting back to them? Like, are they paused and waiting to see what happens, or are they sort of cracking on?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as we say, this budget does feel quite pivotal, not least because of that kind of confidence that we really do need to see change within the UK, both for businesses and for households. And I think, as we say, this budget comes at a juncture where they've had so many kind of cost pressures and things accumulate that everybody, you know, they've got less resilience themselves. So the decisions that are made in the budget are really important to them. And I think the key messages that we hear from business really is that one on cost pressures and the burden, and that's particularly the tax burden. So as Megan said, particularly last year at the budget, businesses, you know, had a huge cost pressure through the increase in national insurance contributions. And that change and successive decisions over the last few years means that now the tax burden in the UK for business is at the highest for 25 years. And I think one of the important things we have to remember within that as well is that two-thirds of those taxes are paid before businesses make profit, or irrespective of whether they make a profit. So that is particularly hitting some of those low margin businesses really sharply. And I think we tend to have members that are kind of in two camps. So some of them, you know, are just really facing those cost pressures so acutely, they're not in any kind of position to invest and they're finding it really hard. And then we have got some members and some sectors particularly who might be in a position to invest, but their hand is kind of hovering over that go button because they're not sure what's coming down the track. And like we say, I think the budget is pivotal for that, but it is where we've had a succession of those different kind of wait and see moments in the UK.
And would it be a fair correlation to make then that we're at businesses facing its sort of highest levels of tax, but we're also probably at our poorest productivity? So, you know, you've got that, like, if you're highly productive, you can weather the storm a little bit. But if you're finding that the whole system isn't as efficient as it should, and we've heard a lot about regulation, you know, creating a drag, not being able to get people with the right skills. So it's quite complicated, isn't it? There's not a quick fix to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think productivity in the UK has been pretty flat for a long time. So it's not necessarily that we're going backwards, but we're not making that progress that we'd like to see. I think that judgment on productivity in the UK that the Office for Budget Responsibility is probably primed to make is quite an interesting time, because obviously there's a lot of debate in the UK at the moment and globally about the possibilities of AI. And definitely that's one of the things that members are really potentially excited about, of where they can see productivity gains within their business. But it's too early in that journey yet to have seen some of that see some of those advantages. So I think that will actually be quite interesting if we do see that pick up in the future. But if you're looking at the UK at the moment, and if you're looking at historically that productivity versus where the OBR thought we were going to be, we're in a much weaker position.
Yeah, like, I do think we have to remind ourselves sometimes, and it's quite far back now, but leading into 2008, the UK actually was holding its own and could match on productivity. And actually, there were years when we could match the growth of the US, where now it feels like, oh, economies like the US would never be able to outperform them. But the reality is the UK has done, and it's not that long ago. But I'm so interested in, like, we know fundamentally it was going to be keeping the Chancellor up at night. You know, it's well documented. There's not as much money as we would like there. But what sort of really do you think drives, is it, or what's most important to her? Is it that credibility with the markets? Nobody wants another trust moment. Is it about her own reputation and her political career? Or do you think they genuinely believe in the fundamentals of growth? You know, where do you think her priorities are?
So I think in terms of what she's said so far, she is obviously very, what she places on herself is that importance of keeping the credibility of the markets. And I think she set out that stall very clearly, and that is important to give that signal to the market. So I don't think that necessarily keeps her up at night, but it's around how to make sure she does retain that credibility. And that, as you said, is where we potentially have a bit of the trade-off between the economics and the politics of the budget. Actually, I think the way that I look at it, at least in terms of that politics, is the kind of short-term versus the long-term, though. Because I think some of the choices that she's got to make, for example, around whether they keep the manifesto commitments, you know, does she perhaps do something on income tax? Politically, in the short term, that is a very difficult decision to make for her. And she can expect a lot of fallout from the budget if she makes that call. But I think, actually, if you look ahead in a couple of years, and perhaps if you're looking ahead to the election, if she makes the call on the politics now and says, no, raising income tax is too hard, for example, I think that makes it harder to square this circle with growth and actually get the UK in a more sustainable position where we can start looking at growth again. And that will make her job harder in a couple of years' time. So I think she has got a really set of difficult decisions. I don't think it's necessarily that the politics and the economics are in completely different places, but I think there is a bit of that short-term versus long-term decision that she needs to take.
And actually, it's important to be honest about that trade-off.
Yeah.
You know, all policy choices come with a trade-off. You know, someone is going to be made worse off at the expense of somebody being made better off. I think, as Louise outlined, you know, what is the big picture here? What is best for the public finances? What is best for the economy? And therefore, what is best for people?
And Meg, do you think business believes that she really is backing growth?
So I think businesses have been quite disappointed so far with what they've seen from this Chancellor. I think particularly because there was a lot of great promises in the manifesto, but also, you know, the budget last year, obviously that was a big hit to businesses. But I think there were some good long-term policy choices that were made. But I think it's this short-term piece where actually that's where businesses are being hit the hardest in the short term. And it's the short term that we need that investment and we need to, you know, to boost growth. So I think they, you know, they're really looking to this budget for, like I said before, just a bit more of that policy certainty. You know, if we've heard anecdotally that, for example, the business tax roadmap that was launched a few years ago, that was probably one of the best pieces of policy in terms of providing a great certainty signal for the business community to just be able to actually plan. And I think, you know, that's the challenge at the moment, is they can barely plan for the next few months. So that they're really looking for this budget to provide more of that certainty.
So Alpesh, what might we see on budget day? And I know we're still 3 weeks out, so a lot could change, but what are the most likely options? We've touched on that there were all manifesto promises. There's been the odd signal. You know, she's been doing quite a lot of speeches in the last few weeks where there's sort of, you know, could be some breaks. What would you say at this point? It'll be interesting if you change your mind in a couple of weeks. But
yeah, I'm actually very interested to hear Louise's answer. I'll kick off from my perspective and then maybe pass on to her. I mean, government have understandably been quite tight-lipped in our conversations with them at time in terms of what they might see. I mean, yes, it does seem like, you know, the door is being opened to revisiting manifesto commitments. You know, there have just been some subtle changes in the way the Chancellor is talking about future tax rises, which suggests that they may not be off the table. Whether that actually happens or not, as Louise said, is kind of a big political call. You know, we have had some rumours around things like sort of changing the tax treatment of sort of incorporated partnerships, for instance, as well, which would obviously raise a fair sum of money too. I think, I mean, we know the playbook now ahead of fiscal events. You will see a lot that's being trickled. You will see a lot of rumours. There is an element of perhaps government sort of testing policy in the press as well, which isn't always the most helpful thing for businesses, as we know, because obviously businesses would sort of value the certainty of the announcements more than anything else. But it, in terms of what we've gleaned so far, I think it does sort of largely seem to be in that space. But Louise is the expert on this.
Well, I don't think, like anybody else, I've got a kind of crystal ball, but I think, like you say, there's a couple of things that they're definitely flying kind of kites over. I mean, I think, to step back for a second, one of the big choices that she's going to have to make is she going to go for some of those kind of bigger reforms that she could potentially make if you're looking to potentially raise, you know, another kind of 10, 20 billion pounds? Or is it that you're going to try and work your way around the manifesto commitments, but that means you're probably going to do little bits here, little bits there, and it's all a bit kind of piecemeal? And that again comes back a bit to how bold do they perhaps feel kind of politically. I think a couple of weeks ago, I think they were probably still trying to make the numbers add up with, you know, can we do a bit here and can we do a bit there? It does seem, as Alpesh says, the kind of mood has changed a little bit about understanding actually perhaps we do need to really step back and make some of these bigger choices. And I think, to be honest, whilst, like I say, that might be quite painful in the short term, that probably is the better decision for the longer run. And I think the important thing with that is to really think about, can you do that whilst making kind of reforms and improving the system? So for example, if they do look at income tax, actually there's some incredibly high rates that are quite bad for work incentives within particular bands. And actually, if they can do some of that reform at the same time as maybe the increase one of the rates across the board, I think that would be quite positive. As Alpesh says, in some of the other things, you know, they are looking potentially at changing some of the regimes around NICs for kind of partnership agreements and things like that. We know that there's also two decisions that they are going to have to make in the autumn as well. So one of them is around fuel duty. So traditionally, that has been this kind of, I think it's been described by others as a bit of a kind of fairy tale that's saying that it's going to go up every year, and then every year it's kind of frozen. So they will need to make that decision. If they decide to actually continue to freeze that will cost them an extra kind of £5 billion, I think it is. So that's a decision that they need to make. Or is that again another area they might look at more fundamental reform? And the other thing, which we know is a really big priority for our members as well, is around business rates. So this again was part of the manifesto, that they said that they were going to look at reform of business rates. At the moment, they're looking relatively narrowly, although importantly, like we say, for some of those sectors that are really under pressure, like retail and hospitality on the high street. But the way that they are doing it is essentially kind of moving around that burden within the business community. So there might be some reductions for those high street firms, and they might extend that out to kind of bigger retailers, but actually that's going to be at the expense of professional services and warehousing and things like that as well. They have signaled that longer term reform is on the way, but that won't be in this budget. So I think that is again something that people will be watching out. Exactly how do they make some of those decisions, and, you know, is that a further cost pressure that businesses are going to face?
Because that's the crunch of it, is she needs money now, and a lot of these big projects, a lot of those big announcements from last year, you know, take a long time for the money to come through. It's probably no surprise to people listening to the CBI that our members don't want any more tax rises on business. But at the same time, we have millions of households in the UK that are really struggling. And you can understand, therefore, why the Chancellor doesn't want to touch income tax. Of course, I come from Scotland. We've got quite a few more bands, and we do pay higher rates of tax at the top. But at the bottom, it's pennies, but we pay less tax. What is the impact, or what would the impact to make the money up that she needs to, could income tax do it? And are we talking hundreds of pounds on a household? Like, what is the reality of doing that? Because actually, when you look at it in Scotland, it's often not very much until you get quite far up.
Yeah, I mean, if you crunch the numbers, and obviously the numbers themselves, you know, are very state contingent, they depend on where the economy is at one point in time, etc. But if you really do crunch the numbers, the Chancellor probably doesn't need to do much on income tax to kind of raise a substantial amount of money. I think the metric from HMRC is something like a 1p increase in the basic rate of income tax yields about £8 billion of revenue. You know, that's not unsubstantial. And it's important to note households are struggling, and I don't want to diminish the struggles of particularly certain households at the lower end of the income distribution who are, you know, there is evidence that there is a lot more debt distress there, that they have been very exposed to the headwinds from high inflation. But actually, household fundamentals in aggregate have been improving. You know, we do need to bear in mind that real incomes are actually growing, and they're growing quite substantially because inflation has fallen back and wage growth has picked up as well. So there is scope to do something there, I think, while also being mindful, as I say, of the stress in particular parts of the income distribution. I think it comes back to the earlier point that I made, which is actually being honest about trade-offs.
And Megan, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I think as well, to go back to what Louise was talking about the kind of wholesale reform versus tinkering, I think for a lot of businesses, the biggest concern is that it is going to end up being a budget of tinkering, and a lot of things, you know, like sector specific taxes, for example, things that are just pulled out of the back pocket and are not necessarily good for growth, like they're actually distortive for growth. And I think they also set a precedent of, you know, if we increase taxes on a certain sector, or which sector is next. So I think there is this real issue that they are kind of creating all of this uncertainty around the lead up to the budget, and that even though there's a lot of things being trailed, actually, I think for businesses, it feels like nothing is off the table at the moment. And it's kind of a, we'll wait and see what is announced on the day.
So looking ahead, what should households and businesses, and I suppose international investors, because a lot of our largest companies in the UK are actually from overseas as well, be looking out for? What are the sort of signals that we should be sort of keeping an eye out for over the next few weeks, do you think?
So I think one of the big things, again, is around how does the Chancellor approach this budget? And what we have continually been encouraging her to do is to make sure that she, and to be fair, the whole government, because I think they all need to get behind this, is thinking about the budget in terms of how does that support the government's growth mission? Because I think going back to the start of the conversation, we're in a low growth environment within the UK. All these challenges that we're talking about come down to low growth, low productivity. And at the end of the day, what we want to see is we want to see living standards increase for households. And that comes down to having higher productivity so that those wage increases can be sustainable. So I think, like we say, we understand that you might need to think about where taxes rise, but it's where you're looking at the whole tax system. How can we perhaps make some of those changes, but at the same time, we're simplifying the system. We're thinking about how it can be efficient and done much better, rather than layering on more and more complexity and additional rates and things like that. So I think that needs to be the kind of high level principles where she approaches the budget. And I think those signals from her around, you know, growth remains the key mission, and that is how she's going to tackle the budget, I think will help to reassure people that even if some of these decisions are painful in the short term, there is that longer term strategy that will help boost growth in the longer term.
I know, to ask a question.
Of course.
So I think building on Louise's point, I think this is a question for everyone on the panel. I mean, coming back to sort of growth mission and sort of longer term growth, I mean, the government does have the components of a longer term growth strategy. You know, when we think about industrial strategy, the infrastructure plan, there's a trade strategy, you know, they've attempted to do something on planning, whether it's bearing out or not is another matter. Does the government deserve sort of credit for that? And Megan, do you feel like that those things are cutting through with members? Are they sort of grasping the fact that the government is, you know, they do have their eye?
Yeah, so I think on things like planning, for example, that, you know, members are saying that is definitely going in the right direction, but it's just, it hasn't fully embedded into the system yet. So it's, you know, you can't see the full effects of it. And I think that's part of the challenges. There's a lot of great noises and a lot of, you know, the sentiment is kind of going towards the right direction, but it's how does that fully embed into the system? Then how do, you know, businesses interact with it? And therefore, what is the wider economic impact of that? But I do, and I think also on the international front, you know, businesses are very happy with where the government is playing there. You know, the trade deals we've been able to make, you know, a lot better than a lot of other countries. So I don't think we should be, you know, calling out this government for not doing absolutely everything they can. But I think the challenge is domestically and at home, and that's going to be the biggest challenge for this budget.
And I would add to that, like, I think we saw real support on the industrial strategy. It's a good piece of work. Mm-hmm. We're doing our big roadshow next year. We're doing like 12 events across the country, and we've got members engaged with that up and down the country. And I think the recognition of those fundamental sectors as well. So, yes, we've identified the sectors where there's aerospace and defence and tech, but also that recognition that our sort of foundational sectors are really important too means that everybody can be part of that journey. But it's the delivery, isn't it? Yeah. And everybody also knows that that will take time to come through. So how does she bridge that short gap? I think the international is really interesting. I had a big energy member actually say to me about why weren't people taking more of the opportunity. At the end of the day, our tariffs to the US are 10, Europe's are 20-30. There's an arbitrage straight there that we should be taking advantage of. And I think getting companies a bit more excited about those opportunities. We had the Indian High Commissioner speak at a big dinner. And, you know, you start looking at the scale of the Indian market is enormous. There's not a single product in the UK that we've got that they probably don't want 10 times over just because of the sheer size of the market. So there are some really positive things out there. I always say it's the battle of profits at the moment. If you're a high margin profit business, you're probably feeling quite optimistic. If you're in a sub 3% profit margin, there is no room whatsoever. And a lot of those businesses that are below that 4%, 3% are big employers. So those impacts of NICs, for example, really had a big impact on the companies I'm certainly speaking to. And conscious of time, what are the things that our members are really wanting? You've touched on business rates. We've definitely heard that. What are the other things that are coming through loudly, particularly with our budget submission that we know businesses are hoping to see?
Yeah, so I think we talked overall about that tax burden. So effectively it's not necessarily what they want the government to do, but what they shouldn't do. So we don't want to see that burden increase. We've talked as well around actually just that speed up of delivery is really important. So going back to that planning, that infrastructure, you know, we often hear from members, even if, for example, they're in, you know, aerospace or defence and there is government spending that is coming down the line, they're yet to see that really kind of converting and hitting them and hitting their supply chain. So we need to just see that kind of speed up in delivery. And I think the other thing that we've touched on a bit on the edges here today, one of the other big cost pressures is around energy costs as well. So I think we do need to see action from the government to address that, both for some of those energy intensive companies, but I think actually the call from our membership is around this is really hitting every business, every sector. So we need to see widespread support as well, because quite often when you're thinking about energy costs, that is one of the things that's holding the UK back in terms of its international competitiveness as well. So we really want to see government action on that.
And Alpesh, you know, Budget Day, one of your favourite days of the year. You will be speed reading through the detail. What would you, you know, if you were to give the budget sort of 3 out of 5, 4 out of 5 stars, what would be the sort of things that you would like to see that you go, you know what, it's a very tough situation the Chancellor finds herself in, but you know what, that's a pretty good budget.
Yeah, I think Budget Day is all of our favourite day. Really. You really see the CBI sort of at its best. You know, it's great to be in the room on the day. I think it comes back to a lot of the things that Louise was talking about. You know, is this a budget that is, you know, not, you know, is the Chancellor not shying away from the difficult decisions that need to be made in the near term for the public finances, while also maintaining a focus on the government's growth mission, on really lifting longer term growth prospects. Because, you know, that's really important for the long run. I think, you know, you look at the metrics on the UK's potential growth, which is sort of the speed limit at which the economy can grow, if you like, without pushing up inflation. And that's really shifted down post-financial crisis. On some metrics, it's almost halved. And so really what we need there to secure prosperity over the longer term for households, indeed for businesses as well, is a really decisive shift upwards there. The auspices are not great in terms of productivity at the moment, as Louise alluded to. So it is really going to need a very laser-like focus on the long term, while also placating markets in the near term and addressing the fiscal challenges that the Chancellor is facing. So, you know, I mean, it's not an easy budget, but a necessary one.
Can I ask, because I think it is quite interesting about, we get really excited now, our growth has hit 1%, you know, where, you know, I don't think anybody's in the land of thinking we could match some India or China, or we're sort of talking 5-6% type growth. But what is a realistic expectation? Because we cannot surely settle that, you know, the UK now forevermore is going to be at 1-1.5. Like, can we see a future where we're over 2%? Is that...
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes back to, as I say, that speed limit for growth. You know, where is that at? And that's always very abstract. You know, you'll have lots of different estimates of where that is. I think most reasonable estimates are somewhere between 1-1.5%, which is in itself not great. When we kind of look back pre-financial crisis, that rate of potential growth was about 2.5-3%. So when I say it's halved, it has actually sort of halved. But that does, and so in terms of what is a realistic rate of growth in the near term, it's sort of roughly in that space, that sort of 1.5% space. You know, I think there's a question over whether that's good enough. There is a way to sort of push out that frontier and boosting productivity, focusing on longer term growth, you know, everything that Louise spoke about, you know, that's quite imperative to pushing out that sort of growth frontier, if you like. And it's something that we really, you know, in the sort of spectrum of near-term fiscal challenges, which really do need addressing, that's really not something we should lose sight of.
And Megan, for you, like we do our survey immediately after the budget. We'll be calling our members for feedback. What do you think they will be, you know, if you had that crystal ball, would they be saying, oh, actually, that's been okay?
I think if there's no further tax rises on business, and
essential,
I think
for that,
I think, and I think just a bit of more certainty. And what I think they'd love to see is, yes, we've done a lot of strategies and we've had a lot of consultations, but now is the real time for delivery. And I think it's that speed of execution point that we hear all the time, is it's now about just get on with the things that you've said you would do. So if we see that and we see no further tax rises, I think we'll have some happy members.
Anything you want to add, Louise?
I just echo those points, really. I think it's kind of around no shocks, no surprises, and almost government kind of getting out of the way or removing some of those barriers. As we talked about that speed limit, a lot of it is around where, if you think about planning and infrastructure building, it feels like there's been just so many extra layers and bureaucracy, and we need to see government kind of helping to strip those back and allowing businesses to do what they do best and to grow and to invest and really create those opportunities for everyone in the UK.
Look, I think that's a really good point to leave us at, because we will be back in a couple of weeks where we'll be a few days out from budget. So hopefully we'll have a little bit more insight of the conversations that we're having with government, because everybody will be doing their bit to get in front of Treasury and get them to listen. I hope you found this really useful. I've certainly learned a few things. As I say, we will be back in a couple of weeks. If you want to learn more about our budget submission, you can go to cbi.org.uk and you'll find a copy of it up there. And do remember to save this so that you can come back in a couple of weeks' time. Thank you very much. Sure.